I did draw a little bit from my childhood, and I was thinking about this. I was kind of prepared to answer this question, and I didn't really know which way I wanted to go with it, because there are things that I definitely pulled from my childhood and I put into that book. But for the most part, I wrote about the life that I may have wanted at that time when surviving the abuse. So I was acknowledging that the abuse was there, but I wish that it may have gone a little differently.
Hi, and welcome to Podcaster Stories. Each episode, we'll have a conversation with podcasters from across the globe and share their story, what motivates them, why they started a show, how they grew the show, and more. We'll also talk about their personal lives and some of the things that have happened or made them the person they are today. And now here's your host, Danny Brown. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Podcaster Stories, where we get to meet the people behind the voices of the shows we listen to. This week's a little different. I'm chatting with my wife about her podcast, which is about to go through a sort of rebrand and relaunch. So it should be a bit of an interesting conversation. So Jacqueline Brown, who's the host of Mental Health and Me, which is about to change, how about you introduce yourself and your podcast to the listeners?
Sure. Hi, my name is Jacqueline Brown, and I host the show Mental Health and Me, or I used to. It is about my mental health journey, really. And it came from my blog, which I think we're disbanding that too. So there's a lot of changes that I think we'll probably talk about today. But yeah, so it's basically just my journey with anxiety and depression and the ups and downs with those two mental illnesses and how they impact me, how my mental health impacts my family, and also how my family's mental health as well. I talk about my journey, but I also talk about theirs, because 3 out of 4 of us have been diagnosed with our own mental illnesses that are similar and different, all in the same. So yeah, it's quite the roller coaster of emotions, we'll say.
And obviously we have 3 dogs, but you don't know what their mental health is like. So it could be a higher ratio than the 3 out of 4.
That is true.
So how did the idea for the show come about? You mentioned that you have a blog, which is sort of gone into the background, sort of disappearing into the ether to concentrate on the podcast. But how did the idea for the show come about?
Well, that's all thanks to you, actually. When I first had the idea of doing the blog, the Mental Health and Me blog, it was because I wanted to write my journey. And I'm really good, or I used to be. I'm up and down with my writing skills, we'll say. But I used to be really good at writing, and so I wanted to write this blog and encourage other people to talk about their mental health as well, because there is this stigma, and I think it's less so now, but there is a stigma around mental health and, should you go to the doctor for your mental well-being? Well, yes, you should. And should we be comfortable talking about it? Well, many of us aren't. We've got like Bell Let's Talk Day, which is one day a year, but we should be comfortable enough to talk about it, you know, whenever. And so my blog was like an outlet for that. And then one day you had said to me, you should really turn this into a podcast and let me show you how to do that. And I thought, yeah, that could work. That sounds really good. And I wanted to, and so I started to do the podcast. I think even once we had an episode of you and I discussing our mental health and together. And then the rest was just me sort of talking to myself, and that would be the answer to your question. That's sort of how the show began. We'll get to where it's going in further. I don't want to answer your next questions before you ask them, but yeah, that's how it came. I started the blog, and then you suggested the podcast, and here we are.
And what did you find easier? Do you find writing about it easier, talking about it via podcast, or a little bit of both?
This is difficult. There are days when I find writing much easier. When I find I have something to say, it's very easy for me to just go and write it down. And so blogging about it can be easier when I have something to say. I don't always have something to say. And so maintaining and updating a blog felt very challenging, especially trying to stay on topic because, you know, there's so many aspects to my life, not just my mental health. So I found that to be challenging. Talking about it is easy when you have someone to talk to. And so I found when it was you and I having a discussion, it was easy and it was natural. Recording a podcast that I was doing myself, it felt very unnatural and it felt forced. And I mean, like I get nervous anyways, even just talking to you right now, I'm there, I feel my nerves, but by myself, there was a lot of extra pressure to be perfect and to get it right. And what am I saying? And what if I mess up? And do I script this or do I not script it? If I script it, then it sounds like a robot. If I don't script it, then like, what if I go way off topic and I forget the whole point of it? So, I mean, there was a lot of pressure when I was podcasting alone. And so I didn't like it. I'll say that. I liked what the show was about and I liked the idea of it, but the actual doing it was very difficult for me. So if it's between the two and it's just me, I'm going to say I much prefer to write than to speak mm-hmm. about it, but...
And I think I can speak to that nervousness. I know like we're recording on Squadcast, which I always use for my guests. And that's got a little video green room and you wanted the camera switched off while we're chatting with each other, even though we're basically next door to each other via a single wall. So I can definitely allude to that nervousness you mentioned.
Well, yeah. And we're married, so I shouldn't be nervous with you. And you know, for our listeners right now, we are not in the same room. We are sharing a wall, like you said, so we can't see each other. So it would make sense to have the cameras on so we can see each other while we're talking on our separate microphones. But I'm happy to look at you and have this conversation with you, but when I turn on my camera, that means I'm going to be looking at me and I would get distracted by me and I behave so like I just unprofessional, we'll say. So it was like, you know what? This is going to go way better if I turn off the camera.
Now, you mentioned obviously your preference primarily for writing if it wasn't a co-hosted show or a conversation on a podcast. So on top of that, what's been some of the challenges you faced early on with the show, either from a technical point of view or just getting the show off the ground, I guess?
So I listen to podcasts, obviously not quite as much as you. It's your business to do so. But I do listen to some podcasts and I find that I enjoy the ones that are, you know, co-hosted or even if it's just one person's podcast and they're interviewing a guest speaker each week. I really enjoy those ones. And I found that when I was listening to podcasts that were just like one person, I mean, like the occasional show with just one person is totally fine, but like an entire series of episodes of just one person talking, you start to hear the scripts and it wasn't my thing. It just wasn't enjoyable. And so I didn't want to be like that. That's one of those things that, that when you want to do something, you emulate the things that you like. It's the same as when, you know, when writing a book, if you want to write a book, you tend to write in the genre that you like to read about because that's your thing. That's what you know. So it makes sense for, you know, in the podcasting world, it's the exact same thing. And so I just found it really like those were my challenges. Like how do you get a podcast off the ground when it's just you and you don't really enjoy listening to podcasts with just one person?
So obviously you mentioned that the trying to find your feet, trying to find your niche, if you like, was one of the challenges. You'd mentioned earlier as well that there's 3 out of 4 of the family unit suffers from some form of mental illness, whether that's depression or anxiety. So was your podcast, is it geared towards family issues? Is it geared towards a certain demographic? Who would your audience be for the show?
Wow. I guess anyone who suffers from mental illness, I would like to gear it towards them, but that's a very big audience. So I niche down to depression and more so anxiety than depression, but I do talk and sort of dance the line between both of them and how they're both related to me and how one impacts the other because I have both. And so I would like to gear the show towards people in the same scenario, because it's very, you know, like even anxiety, you know, you suffer from anxiety and I suffer from anxiety and our son suffers from anxiety. And between the three of us, no two of us are the same, and our symptoms are not the same. And our triggers are not the same, and our outbursts are not the same. Like that. So when we talk about it, we have very different things to say. And so I would like to put that out there, really, to anyone who does not suffer from anxiety. And right now, I don't think that's anybody, but to anyone who doesn't think that they suffer from any sort of mental illness, give us a listen, because you'll get to see what, you know, how different things are for people who do suffer. And so I would like to, you know, I'd like to gear the podcast towards those people and maybe provide some information there. But I think, you know, if I'm being honest, I think more people who do suffer and who are finding out now that they suffer, especially with, you know, COVID and people who didn't suffer before are definitely suffering now. I think that it would be, this would be good for them to see, you know, like it's normal. It's the new normal. It's the old normal. It's normal to suffer, and we all suffer differently, but that doesn't make, you know, one person's symptoms or, you know, one person's anxiety worse or stronger than somebody else's. You know, you can't really compare, is what I'm saying. So just hear us out and hear how we differ, and maybe you'll learn something.
And I think that ties perfectly into a blog post that you wrote on your Mental Health and Me blog a couple of years back, I think it was maybe 2-3 years, called The Glass Box. And that was a very broad descriptive term of what suffering from depression and anxiety feels like. And that I know the response that you got from people, either when it was shared on Facebook or got in touch with you via email, etc. People were sharing how it touched them because it spoke to different aspects of mental illness. So I think that's, like you said, it's a key point that it may be a show about mental health or a show about depression or a show about anxiety, but you've been like dealing with this for 20 plus years now, so you bring a wealth of experiences that anybody can sort of tap into, if you like.
Yeah, and it changes too. Like if you asked me 20 years ago, you know, when I was just finding out finding out the symptoms and what it actually meant, is very different to what I'm suffering now. It changes, but it doesn't go away. And it can get better. Like you can have your better days for sure, and you can have better months even, and go, yeah, I've beat this, I'm doing great. And then all of a sudden something happens and you sink right back into that zone. And so it's good to know what your triggers are. And it's also good to be aware that those triggers will change. They will. And I could talk about this forever.
Now, you mentioned COVID earlier, and a lot more people are now realizing or becoming more aware of their mental health and why it's important to stay on top of it, if you like. What's been some of the challenges you've found, both as a person that suffers from, you know, mental health issues, and as a parent of a kid that also suffers from mental health issues during, say, a lockdown, during pandemic? What's been some of the challenges that you've had to overcome?
So this is interesting, because if you were to ask me, you know, what are the challenges that I've faced, you know, with the lockdown and you know, because of COVID, my anxiety is actually gotten much better, because a lot of my anxiety has been social related, and it's called social anxiety. And so, and you can certainly read about it in that Glass Box post. But I find that when I'm around more people, I am way more anxious, because it's my trigger, right? It's the thing that makes me paranoid. I'm overthinking all the things, and so now that I'm isolated and in lockdown, and we moved so far from everyone we know, I mean, like, I miss people, but I still get to call them and video chat and Zoom and whatever. So I still get my social without actually having to enter their bubble. And so I've been doing, you know, much better, in for the most part, you know, with lockdown. However, my son is different, and so he's taken quite the turn over the last little while, especially. He's a very social being and he's a very competitive being, but he's always been like a social kid. And so he needs his classmates and he needs his soccer team and he needs his extracurriculars and he needs people. And right now he only has our house and he doesn't, he doesn't go to school. He's in online learning and he doesn't have a soccer team and he doesn't have the things that he needs for his sanity. And so I can see it taking a toll on his mental health. And it's been very difficult to parent, I'll say, like to be strong for him and to coach him and to like, I always remind him that it's okay to feel the feelings he's feeling, good or bad. You're entitled to your emotions and to just have them. But it's so hard when many of his emotions are negative now, when he's like the happy kid. And I'll just, to answer your question in a nutshell, it's very difficult.
And it's interesting. I was reading an article couple of weeks back that was on about the physical aspects of COVID and the long COVID, you know, so you may recover quickly from the infection, but the long-term damage to say lungs, heart, etc., is still to really be determined and what that could look like. But it was an interesting piece that looked at what this generation's mental health will look like in 10 years or 20 years time, when we sort of look back and we look at generations and impacts of mass effect. And the concern at the moment is, to your point, kids that are normally social butterflies or really need that social interaction that aren't getting that at the moment. What's the impact going to be on them, and what kind of adults are they going to become? And, you know, is that going to place a big sort of stress on mental health resources in the next 10, 15, 20 years?
Yeah. And, you know, I'd be interested in seeing what happens to our other child for that matter. Like, our daughter is also very social. She's a little social butterfly and always been like the popular kid in the class, and everybody comes to her birthday parties. And, but she just has been coping much, much better with online learning and with social distancing and with all that. She gets on Messenger Kids or whatever and Facebook's with her friends. So she still feels like she's getting that social element. And online learning, she turns on her camera and she's like looking at all her friends. And so I feel like she's in the same room with them. And so maybe it hasn't been as hard on her. But who knows, like you said, the long term, maybe now she's doing great, but like 10, 15 years from now, she might need therapy, but don't we all?
No. 10, 15 minutes from now.
Yeah, right.
10, 15 years. Now, I don't know if interest is the right word, but certainly it's something that will be, you know, it was a valid point the journalist was making about it. So it'll be curious to see what impact that has for sure. Now, we'd mentioned earlier that you had the blog that originated, you know, the podcast, so to speak, and you've always enjoyed writing. You were actually a co-owner of a publishing house for a good few years. And you're a published author yourself with several young adult books to your name. So out of curiosity, what made you choose YA over other genres, over maybe not talking about mental health in your books, for instance?
Well, when I wrote my books, I started writing actually when I was pregnant with our first child. I don't really know what, like, I think I just like woke up one day and was like, I had a dream last night and it was good and I think it would make a good book. And then I started writing and I didn't stop. Like, that's kind of how I started writing. But I say, like, and I said this earlier in the show too, if you want to write a book, you write what you know, right? You write what you would want to read. You write what you would enjoy reading about. And at that time in my life, I read a lot of young adult. I read the Harry Potters, I read the Twilights, I loved young adult fiction. And so it made sense for me at that time to write young adult fiction. Now I read my genre of choice is actually thrillers. And so if I were to start writing again, it would make sense for me to write a thriller. However, I don't think that's a good idea because in order to write a thriller, you need to know like the laws of, I don't know, like police academy and detective work and murder and all these things that I enjoy reading about, but have no background and no, I'm not going to get any experience doing any of those things. So it doesn't make sense for me to continue writing, that was why I wrote young adult fiction back, oh gosh, like 15 years ago, when I was reading all of the young. It's been a really long time since I wrote AD. I don't know if you put that in perspective, but I can't even remember the last time I wrote fiction.
So now I'm thinking of young adults being part of the Police Academy movies.
Yeah.
Like the comedy movies. That anything Police Academy is mentioned, I always sort of jump back to, so was it Steve Guttenberg, I think, was one of the main guys in the movies. One of my favorite series the early ones anyway.
Well, that's funny that you think of that, though. Like, I guess I have a number of friends who've been through actual police academy, and it's not at all like the show. So when I think police academy, I think like the real thing.
Well, police academy was a real thing, wasn't it?
I'd have to go back and watch.
That maybe had more mishaps, but than your average police academy.
Isn't that like the Three Stooges? They're real too, right? I don't know.
King Kong?
Yeah.
Now, one of your book series, because you wrote, as you mentioned, you were focused on young adult, and you actually wrote a book series that was about a young teen who has an abusive childhood and how that impacts her outlook on life and her personality. So how much of that was drawn from personal experiences? Because when I was reading it, I saw some parts, I thought, that seems kind of like familiar, if you like.
Yeah. So the series that you're talking about, that was the first book and set of books that I ever wrote. And so for the record, those were never published. They were just, that was just a project I did for myself and I made sure to get them bound and look pretty so that, you know, we could read them in proper format instead of a Word document, but it was not published. So it's not out there in the universe. But for those who did read it, I did draw a little bit from my childhood and I was thinking about, I was kind of prepared to answer this question and I didn't really know which way I wanted to go with it because there are things that I definitely pulled from my childhood and I put into that book. But for the most part, I wrote about the life that I may have wanted at that time when surviving the abuse. So I was acknowledging that the abuse was there, but I wish that it may have gone a little differently. And I guess an example of this is I never had a good relationship with my brother as a child, as an adult. Like we were never friends. We never had a good relationship. We never had a strong bond. And in the book that you're talking about, they had the brother-sister connection was very strong. And he helped her get through many of the, much of the dark, we'll just say all the dark periods, he was there for her. And in my childhood, unfortunately, I have to say my childhood was a little bit darker than that because I didn't have that bond with my brother and I didn't have someone to show me the light, if you will. So I kind of had to get there on my own, but I mean, I did. So I feel like pros and cons with the book, like, yes, I put some of the dark in the book, but I showed a different side of, in the book than what actually happened. So it's more fiction than real. I'll just say that.
And one of the main characters, obviously, you talked about bonds and strengths in that series. And one of the main characters with the bond was between the daughter and the mom as well. And obviously, I know how close you and your mom are. Did your mom read that? And did she look back at some of the things that happened that she wasn't aware of, or Did your mom not get to read these books?
My mom read them, and she was very proud of me actually for opening up in there. But she said it was very emotional for her, and it was very difficult for her to read some of that because of how honest it was. Now, I will say, I kind of wrote the mom out of the books, and that was just easier for me when I was writing them to say this series is about this girl and her brother and how they are dealing with their high school relationships, and that's it. And so I ended up writing the mom out of the book by just saying that she worked all the time. So she was like, she wasn't dead. She was totally there, but she wasn't a part of the kids' life because she had to work to support them. She had to work to put a roof over their heads. So she was like, those kids basically raised themselves while the mom was financing it. And that was just how I wrote the book. But my mom, as hard of a worker as she is, I don't remember a time in my life when she was not there for me. And I think that's very different from what I portrayed in the book. And I made sure to tell her that afterwards. Like, I wrote her out because it was easier for me to write the story about the two siblings without a mother interference, because that's not what the story was about. So, like I said, in my life, my brother and I were not close. So my mom and I were, and we, of course, we had our ups and downs. We weren't always as close, but I don't remember her ever not being there.
So you mentioned that the book, obviously, it drew from some experiences. Some were fictional, and some are how you wanted it to happen, with either, you know, the brother-sister dynamic and that it was a different dynamic with your mom. Because you're so close with your mom now, I guess you've always been, but certainly now, are there any lessons you've learned from, you know, that time that you spoke about in the book, if you like, to now and raising your own children now that you're a mom of two yourself?
It's funny. I don't even know how best to answer this. What I've learned from my childhood and how I parent my children. I want to say I learned what not to do. I shouldn't say that because my mom is awesome, but I know that I show my kids every day how much I love them and how much they mean to me. And I don't know that was ever shown to me as a child. Maybe that's what I needed, but it's definitely what I do for my kids. And you'll notice, and I know you do this also, but anyone else who sees us in our home environment will notice that my son, for example, my daughter too, but my son more, will say, "I love you" to each of us individually 20 to 30 times a day, no exaggeration. And every time he says it, we say, "I love you too." We don't go, "Oh, I'm tired of hearing that." We respond, we acknowledge that he said it, and we say it back. And he'll come in for a hug and we hug him back. We will stop what we're doing and he gets that hug. And my daughter, like I said, she does it too, but I think she almost does it just because her brother is doing it. But he does this. I don't know if it's something that I learned to do or not to do from my own childhood, but I make sure to, no matter how busy I am, I make sure to reciprocate those hugs and those "I love yous" because I think they are super important and they are for sure what we need in this house.
And I'm wondering, I know exactly what you mean. Obviously, I'm in the house too, so I know exactly what you mean, but I'm wondering if you mentioned that her daughter doesn't, you know, say it as often, even though we know she does love us. But I'm wondering if that boils back down to your point earlier that she has the almost physical daily interaction with her classmates and friends that her son doesn't. So maybe the physical interaction he needs, he's getting from the love and the hugs that he initiates each day or each time.
It could be, but I know that he was like this even before the lockdown and even before COVID, and even when he was going to school every day and in soccer, in his rep soccer league, and doing that 3 or 4 times a week, like he still needed to say that he loves us, and he still needed to come in for hugs for no reason. And I love it. But I think our daughter is a little different just in that I think she doesn't need to say it. She knows it. So, and I can see that in her, because if she ever felt unloved, we would know, we would certainly know. She would make sure we knew that she was not feeling as happy or as loved as her brother. She would tell us. I think it could be me too, because I know I'm the type of person that says I love you all the time, and I like hearing it back. I love you too. I think it's important. And I know with my ex partners, I can think of one in particular where I would say it and he wouldn't say it back. And I'd be like, what's wrong? Like, don't you love me? And he's like, I don't feel like I need to say it. Like, you should just know that I do. And it's true. Like, we should just know this. If we're showing it, we don't have to say it. And I think that's where our daughter is. But our son, just like me, needs to say it and hear it back. And so we give him that. That, I don't think it has so much to do with COVID. Maybe it might be enhanced because of the lockdown, but I think it's something ingrained in us.
It's like, it makes me think of the Elf movie when he's always singing, I love you, you're my dad, and I love you. And his dad doesn't want to reciprocate until near the end of the movie,
you,
when he gets this big life lesson. So no, I hear you. I love the fact that he's like that for sure. Now, you mentioned earlier that your show started off as a solo podcast and it was Mental Health and Me. But it's about to relaunch within the next few weeks, I guess. And I believe it's going to be called Mental Health and Us, where it's going to be a co-hosted show with yourself and me. And we'll have guests on there to talk about different aspects of mental health and mental illness. So what are your goals with the show, with the relaunch coming up? And what would you hope to achieve with the show moving forward in its new sort of format, if you like?
I'm going to say I have similar goals as I did when I launched the first time, except I'm hoping that it will be, I don't know, I want to say like less dramatic. I'm hoping it's more casual and easygoing. I don't know. I felt like when I first came out with it just being me, it felt very like dark, and I don't want it to be dark. I mean, like, I know the things that we're talking about are, you know, like, you know, mental illness, not like mental health and well-being. We're talking about mental illness. We're talking about the downs of like mental health. And it is a serious topic, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk about it. And so I'm hoping to make it fun, but I'm hoping it's more of enjoyable to the listener who's not just listening to somebody come on and vent all the time, because that can get depressing from a listener perspective. So I'm my goal is to that by opening the doors to more people, that it becomes more enjoyable to listen to and more informational and less, I don't know, ranty.
So it's like almost like opera, like you get a symptom, you get a symptom, yeah. You get a symptom, like that kind of approach. No, and I think that it's, to your point, I completely agree. It's I think we all know that mental wellness and mental health is a deep, heavy topic. And it can be, like you said, it can be really hard to talk about with the stigma that's around it. So I think bringing fun and bringing sort of not so much energy, but just, hey, we're having a normal conversation. You wouldn't feel bad talking about a broken arm or the fact that you've stubbed your toe or banged your shin or whatever, which is physical ailments. So I don't think we should be, you know, we shouldn't be talking any differently when it comes to mental ailments either, I don't think.
Yes, I agree. I don't know if that's a question.
That was your cue. I was just adding on a little value add there. I will have to edit that part out.
No, I like it.
Real. So we've been speaking about obviously the influences of your childhood and your you know, growing up and some of the people in it. I think I know the answer to this question. I'm going to ask anyway. Who would be your personal hero and why that person?
Ah, you totally know. And it is somebody I already talked about lots today. My hero is my mother, like hands down the easiest choice. If you asked me to like pick a celebrity or somebody dead or whatever, I wouldn't have any clue where to start. But like for my hero, I would pick my mother because she is the strongest person I know. She survives anything, like anything that comes her way. she can survive it. And, you know, poor girl, she broke her foot, you know, this week, and has had surgery and plates and rods and whatever else. And she's surviving, like she's still going. And she had, you know, she had two young, so she had her, she had me and my brother when she was really, really young. And so she had to alter her life course because she had two, she was a kid when she had kids, we'll just say it that way. And she did. And then she had to get her education differently because she had kids at home. So she wasn't able to do things the way kids did. And, or I should say teens, like, right? She had to get her education differently, and she did it. And then she got a job, and then she got a better job, and then she got a better job. And like, she's constantly working towards something and constantly progressing. And she's such a good role model for me. Like, she's a winner. Like, I don't know how I could better say that. Like, she never, even when times are tough, she manages to get through it and show me the positive outlook, you know, the positive way to look at things, so that, you know, so that I'm not always down. And I can't, I really, like, if you're listening, Mom, I wanted to say you're my hero and thank you. I love you.
And you'll get a better, a bigger part in the next book.
Yeah. It'll be the thriller though. You know that, right?
Oh yeah. I know she's going to be the victim of the shower now.
Yeah, yes.
Killed off in chapter two.
But bigger.
Exactly. So Jacqueline, I've really enjoyed speaking with you today. It's been interesting just being a wall away from you having this talk, because normally my guests are obviously very different, very remote from me, but I've really enjoyed chatting with you. For people that want to connect with you or listen to the podcast, or even, you know, check out a new project you're about to launch as well, where's the best place they can find you?
You know what? I want you to answer this question because we've done so many changes. I don't even know like what my email address is anymore. How about you answer this question?
Okay, fair enough. Nice deflection there. Deflection. I know. Okay, so yeah, so the podcast is called Mental Health and Us, and you can find it at mentalhealthpodcast.ca. Jacqueline's new project is A Girl in a Book, which is a book review site and membership site, which is kind of cool. And you can find that at girlandabook.com.
Girl in a Book.
But maybe check it out at the end of February when it's actually live.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure I will have email addresses for those too, but I don't even know what they are. So once we have them, we will definitely post them. But I will say Girl in a Book is correct because I tried A Girl in a Book and was disappointed. So, Girl in a Book.
Well, as I say, Jacqueline, thanks again for coming on. I'll be sure to put the links to the various sites in the podcast in the show notes. So if you're listening to this episode on your favorite podcast app, make sure to check out the show notes as usual so you can click straight through to them. So Jacqueline, thanks again for appearing on the show today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
This has been Podcast Stories. If you enjoyed this week's episode, be sure to subscribe on your favorite app. You can also hop over to podcasterstories.com and get the free newsletter so you get an episode as soon as it comes out. Until the next time, take care and stay safe.